Okay, my part of this study is, our commentary is enjoy work, and I'm sorry I missed last night. I was out enjoying my work. Anyway, going to spend some time talking about several different aspects, but I want you to really spend some time thinking about your life, okay? Once upon a time, there was an incredibly happy man. Had an amazing career in business. He had achieved reasonable financial independence, not crazy wealth. He had comfort without fear, accolades from his peers, co-workers, even competitors. His life had unfolded and progressed according to plan. He lived within his means, seemed to be happy. I want you to remember this man as we go through our study, and we're going to refer back to him as we go along. As I said, my assignment was to discuss or identify enjoy work from Ecclesiastes 3. Probably easiest thing in the world for me to talk about. Guys, I got to tell you, and we're going to spend some time, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story, but I want you to make it your story. I love what I do. I have no interest in retiring. I'd like to duck hunt a little more and change my pace, but I don't want to retire. This is what I want to do. And I'm very fortunate to enjoy. But I think enjoyment is a journey. It's a thought process. It's a mindset. It's not what happens to you moment by moment. I'm not the guy in the story that we're telling. My story is much more complicated than that. I think yours is probably more complicated. Before I start, I always like to talk about or give an anecdote or give a mind purge, and so let's do that first. Perspective, experience, and choices are a big part of what we will ponder on today. In an interview, Warren Buffett was asked to give a fundamental key to success. He said, without hesitation, making right choices is one of the fundamental keys. He said, we are all faced with choices, forks in the road, which path to choose, decision-making that will undoubtedly shape our personal, family, and professional future. He said, you must recognize and identify those important opportunities to the best of your ability. The interviewer then asked, how can we do that? Mr. Buffett said, you have to use your personal and experience and hopefully some wisdom to consider the possible outcomes of each possible path. He was then asked, how do you get the experience and wisdom to make good decisions? He said, oh, that's the simplest part, by making bad decisions. Right? Okay, so you got to outlive those decisions. And so that's some of the things that we'll talk about today. Nothing teaches us better than personal experience, and better than that, I'm sad to say, personal failure. I really believe some things can only be learned with experience, and I'm going to give you a personal example that has already happened in your house to show you what I mean. You've been talked to, you've discussed, you've learned, you've watched, and everyone has told you about girlfriends and wives, and you got married anyway, right? So we know from personal experience that our lives will be shaped with personal experience and not just the advice of others. So some of us had a wonderful experience, and some of our wives have not had the same similar experience. Okay, so more on our guy we first talked about. He was at one time a scratch golfer. Just note he still visits the club, but more to relax than to play. All right, I want to tell you a little bit about my journey, and I want you to make sure that you understand I'm not bragging. I'm not trying to seek personal fulfillment, but I want you to relate this to you, right? But I want you to recognize that I've not been, I'm not been given, right? Not by my father or whatever. Life has delivered to me this path, and it truly is a wonderful journey that God's part of. And I think we've got to do that in our own lives, okay? So I'm going to run quickly, but you got to make your own story. But I want to legitimize what we're going to talk about to me. If it doesn't work for you, Scott Barker asked me how long I was going to speak, and I said, I've run through this several times, and it's between 15 minutes and 2 hours every time. So anyway, okay, 1976, I graduate from college. I'm not married. I moved to Houston. I work for the Southwestern Bell Telephone Company in a management development program. What a deal. Paul and I go to Spring Branch Church. Robert Harkrider was there. Roy Cogdell and John and Beverly were there. And some of y'all were there, but we looked different then. So Paul and I get married in 1978. She moves to Houston. 1978, I buy a boat dealership in Hope, Arkansas, the boyhood home of President Clinton. Bill Clinton and I were born in the same hospital, different days, but the same hospital, no longer there. 1980, Jimmy Carter becomes president. Interest rate on my floor plan is 22.5%. My brother gets hurt in a car wreck, breaks his neck, still in a wheelchair today, and totally changed every prospect I had in life. Changed my family, changed everything. My brother was working for me in the shop, and if you run your own business or know anything about that, you can work for yourself for nothing, but you can't hire anybody else that'll work that way, right? Okay, 1980, October of 1980, my brother breaks his neck. We fly an air ambulance to Dallas that day. I'm 22.5% on the floor plan. My business is horrible. The insurance company denies covering his accident because of a pre-existing condition, which was obviously not true. He had scoliosis, and he had some surgery on his spine. He broke his neck up here. When the insurance canceled, I'm in Hope, Arkansas, a small town. The bank locks up my business because they're afraid that I'm going to raid my business and take care of my brother because he may be dying. They locked my business, took all of the money, and said, I don't know. Okay, horrible deal, right? John gave me money. Some of y'all may have gave me money. We had no money, nothing, access to nothing. I'm riding a bus from Texarkana to Dallas to see my brother. It is tragedy multiplied. All the walls have fallen in. I don't know what's going to happen. Long about December, we realize he's probably going to live, but he's going to be a quadriplegic. January, I go to the bank and say, look, you suckers, I don't know what we're going to do. The only thing I don't know to do, I've never been to an auction. I want to have an auction. I'm going to hire an auctioneer. I'll give you all the money. Y'all figure me up a note. We'll see what happens. I had an auction, gave the bank the money. They figured me up a note, which sounded like a multi-million dollars at the time, but really learned something. Auctioneer made money. I lost money. I thought, gosh, you don't have to be very smart to do this. So put me on a whole different path, right? Okay, So, but think about this as we go along. Is God involved in that? You bet he's involved in it. I don't know how, but he's certainly involved in it, right? Okay, skip all the way to 2000. For 37 years, my wife and I have taken care of my brother in houses and cars. And he was married at the time, been married about a year and a half. They were married about another 20 years. She was crazy when they got married. She was crazy when she left, and he married another crazy woman that came into our lives. And now she's gone. But so what I want you to realize is nobody's path is uncomplicated, right? So as we talk about enjoyment, it's focusing on the right things. It's not saying, oh, well, I just had a blessed life. And as we go through this, I want to keep looking at this guy at the country club, right? Because everything seems lovely in his life. All right, let's go to Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, verses 9 through 15, and that's the basis for what we're doing. Ecclesiastes 3, 9 through 15. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which has already been and that which is to be has already been, and God requires an account of what is past. Certainly understandable if we spend enough time on it. The writer tells us God wants us to enjoy. It's created in us. We might say it's part of our DNA. I want us to engage a little bit and think about some things that, let's define enjoyment. Okay? And work with me here. What are the components of enjoyment? Contentment. Okay, what else? Peace? What else? happiness. Apparently, I've got to turn on my hearing aid. Thrilling. Love for it. What else? Guys, happiness is about money. It's about football. It's about duck hunting. Come on. Happiness is fun. Happiness is enjoying. Enjoyment is participating. Oh, yeah, we can have these big lofty goals about contentment and viewing the Lord. But what do we do every day? What do the people we're around every day do? They're seeking to enjoy. They're not seeking to be fulfilled. Now, if we can understand being fulfilled, that's absolutely wonderful. And that's where we have to get. And if we're going to enjoy our life and have a relationship with God, we have to get there. But if we don't understand, you know, if you're a sinner not enjoying your sin, you're committing the wrong sin. Right? And I mean, that's the challenge we're dealing with. Sinners aren't unhappy people. They just have a bad destiny. Now, they can be unhappy. You know, one of the things I heard the other day said, the biggest deception of Satan is there's no consequences for sin. Right? I got a friend right now that's involved in an affair, and he didn't think there was any consequences. And it's about to blow his world up. And he's got lots of stuff that I hope I get part of. Right? So if we can, if Satan can convince us there's no consequences, he's there. Okay, but realize enjoyment, a feeling of pleasure, a definition by out of the dictionary. Feeling of pleasure caused by doing something you like, the condition of having and using something you perceive as good. Enjoyment looks to be objective from the outside. Remember our guy. Another thing. He drives a really cool old Mustang, but his son won't engage academically or socially in school. Okay. A challenge that we have to recognize as men, we have the ability, I think, and I don't think this is unique to me, to segment, right? Events, personalities, conflicts, and all of that. You know, one of the things that my kids used to be amazed of, we travel a lot together, and I could be on the phone throwing a fit with a customer or an employee or somebody, and I could hang up the phone, and we'd immediately go back to watching Hank the Cow Dog, right? And Logan would say, what's up with that? And, of course, Paul is just appalled. How can you, are you mad or not? I'm not mad at y'all. I'm mad at them, right? We can segment all the time. Okay, if we're not careful, we're going to segment our enjoyment. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Because I'm telling you, I love what I do. I've learned to love what I do. And I'm sorry to say, sometimes I dread weekends. Sometimes. Okay, so that's the enemy of my family. I can't do that. But I can segment so well that I can enjoy whatever I choose to enjoy, right? Okay, we can enjoy a portion or a segment of our activity in our lives and really be very unhappy in many other ways. The key importance of enjoyment is how it affects those around us. You've heard the phrase, the speed of the team is the speed of the leader, right? Or the speed of the leader is the speed of the team, I guess is the way I should have said that, right? Okay, so how many times, and think about this as it affects your home, your job, your church, all of the stuff that are so important to us. You know, Logan and I talk all the time. He works together. He lives in Fort Worth. And we talk every day about business and different things. And one of the things that's most frustrating to him is, Dad, why? Why am I the one that always has to be happy at my house? That's his job, bro. Right? Okay. So... Does this happen at y'all's house? If I'm in a bad mood, the dogs are in a bad mood. My wife's in a bad mood. The whole thing comes apart, right? So one of the best advice that I ever got as a businessman is when I had an office out in West Texas. During the 80s, we had an office in Midland, Lubbock, Dallas, Houston, and Texarkana, where I live. Okay, I had a small plane, not a huge plane, and a single engine. I flew 400 hours one year in a single-engine Bonanza, and that's a lot. It's like riding in a two-passenger pickup. You're sweating against your pilot's shoulder every day. It's a mess. Anyway, I was out and on the road all the time, and I enjoyed that, but I was denying the opportunity for my family. But so the speed of the leader is the speed of the team. My pace controlled the pace of whatever we were doing. Like it or not, your pace is going to control the pace of your family, right? Think about how it impacts your kids when they see what you do. Think about how it impacts your kids and when positively and negatively. It's the same thing as far as enjoying work. Let's talk about some specifics, okay? Not theory. What makes us enjoy our jobs? The people. Okay? What else? Paycheck. Absolutely. Wouldn't go if you didn't get that, would you? What else? The challenge? What, Josh? Accolades. Absolutely. Achievement? What else? Purpose. Okay? Reward? Okay? All right, so the hours that we work, the location, vacation, days off, flexibility, the people, the company, co-workers, vendors, competitors, insurance, savings plans, fulfillment, the skills to do the task, the prestige of the company. Oh, prestige of the company? What happened to Enron? Future growth, personally, professionally, and financially. Okay? Absolutely. All of those things we can enjoy. And those are benefits of our work, right? Okay, so remember a guy at the club? He's not overweight, but he's got a borderline diabetic condition, and he just got back from his European vacation. All right, so let's look at the things that destroy or prohibit enjoyment. Let's do personally first. What destroys or prohibits enjoyment in our personal life? Health. Ooh. I did an auction last night for the Leukemia Lymphoma Association in San Antonio, and I'm telling you, they had people up there talking about it, and you just think, thank you, Lord, that I do not have this disease. Anyway, you're right. Health is, it's not a concern until you lose it, right? Okay, so personal enjoyment. What else component? Attitude? What else? Okay. Money. Okay, guys, remember, again, just get practical about it. I mean, think about what we want, what we care about. We want money. We want time off. It's what affects us. Reaching the goal. Let me ask you something. Is caring a component of enjoyment? It should be. Think about that. We have a concern. One of the things, and we'll talk about this, and it'll get a little muddy if I can't keep it straight in my own mind. I think sometimes intentions are an enemy to enjoyment, right? Because I have the most wonderful intentions. If you knew my intentions, I'm telling you, today y'all would take up money and put a bronze statue of me out there. Because if things work out, I'm going to do it. Not likely, but our attention sometimes makes us believe that we're better people than we are. They make us believe that our circumstances are really different than they are. But everything's going to, I intend, everything's going to go that direction. Success, reaching a goal, effort certainly a component. So let me ask you this. Can enjoyment be increased or expanded by conditioning? Okay, so think about that, right? Okay, so more or less enjoyment, yes or no enjoyment, how do we expand that? How do we do a better job? How do we achieve it? It better be a expandable and achievable with conditioning, right? With practice. How do you learn? Think about where you are in your job, and when someone calls and says, you know, this just happened. If you've been doing it several years, you say, well, then we're just going to take care of it. If you've not been doing it long, you just freak out, right? Last week, I'm involved in a mobile bidding company. You text a charity auctions. Last Saturday night, the idiot that works for us and runs all of our equipment in Phoenix failed to update our iPads to a new Apple app company-wide. We had 47 events last Saturday night that we couldn't swipe our credit cards because our guy didn't update our iPads. We buried him Wednesday. And if it had been my choice, we would. But anyway, so we're just freaking out. And some of our young people really damaged our relationship with our customers. And some of our experienced people enhanced our relationship with our customers because they said, hey, everything works. We just can't swipe the credit card. We're fine. We're going to survive. You're going to have a good event. We're going to raise the money. Everybody will be okay. But the young guys had their dress up over their head, running up and down. The system has crashed. We're dying. We're all out of business. Okay? So maturity gives us the component of expanding our enjoyment, right? So always when you get that call, when, you know, does this happen at y'all's house? I'm telling you, I've been married 40 years, and I just learned this probably 3 months ago, maybe a little longer than that. Don't overreact. You know, and y'all probably learned that the first week, right? But oh, you want to get out your sword? Let's go. I got a bigger sword. Don't engage. Think, right? And base this on enjoyment. What's this going to do to my relationship? What's this going to do? If we acted in our jobs like we act sometimes to our friends and family, we wouldn't have a job anymore. We know how to act. We just don't do it sometimes, right? Going back to my situation, I told my brother was married for 20 years to this lady. I told her one time, I would appreciate it if you would give me the courtesy of a total stranger and quit treating me like family. Right? She knows how to act. So you've got to think about that as we're going to build a path to enjoyment. But if we don't put all of this subjectivity in it, we're not going to get anywhere. The past 15 minutes. Okay. Does enjoyment mean fun or the wisdom to be content? Yes. Okay. Absolutely. But ultimately, fun is inside the wisdom of being content, right? It's a component of contentment. Because if it's only fun, we're going to really be disappointed for all kinds of reasons. Listen to this. Jeff wrote an article some weeks ago that was in the bulletin. And, you know, I'm the victim of this. When Curtis and Marianne were here, you know, Curtis did the cards that just had one verse on it for a time. And Marianne made me read those. And she said, look, I don't think you read the Bible very much. Would you take time to read one verse a week here? I said, sure. And so I think the elders should probably make us read the bulletin, okay? We all have, and this is from Jeff a few weeks ago, we all have things in our lives that serve as a source of pride and security. Perhaps it may be some talent or ability that God has blessed us with, or maybe some material blessings the Lord has bestowed on us. We often look at such things which we can control and utilize and place confidence in. Why is it that we do that? What we always fail to remember is that while we may have certain abilities and commodities at our disposal, circumstances can wreak havoc on our goals and the means with which we intend to accomplish those goals. Okay, my story. I'm running my boat dealership in Hope, Arkansas. My brother gets hurt. That wasn't the plan. And as the inspired wise man put it, the race is not to the swift, the battle is not to the warriors, neither bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to the men of ability, for time and chance overtake all. Ecclesiastes 9:11. Even though from our limited human vantage point, a person may look like they have their house in order, the guy that we're talking about as we go through, and have made ample provisions for their future needs and even wants, God reminds us that there is more to life than we can see or anticipate from our limited perspective. And yet, despite this, we often trust ourselves and our own efforts and rest our sense of security on our own works rather than the Lord. When you go to work, what's your primary thought about the day and what you're going to put forth? Is it the confidence that you have or the trust that you have in the Lord? I'm going to tell you it's the confidence that you have. Now, I'm going to say in Bible class it's the trust I have in the Lord. But I show up at work every day knowing I can do my job. Now, when I step back just a little bit, the Lord has given me the talent and the ability and the drive He's created in us as we see in His Word. But we have to condition that and expand it, and we better recognize that's what Jeff is telling us, and that's what the Bible is telling us. That's what He's pointing out to us. We have to pay attention that what we think is ours is not ours. Guys, let me go back just a little bit. In college, I was very not into state politics, but I was president of my freshman class, president of my sophomore class. My junior year, I ran for president of the student body, and I was president of the Senate. I was into that deal. And I grew up in Arkansas where Bill Clinton was governor. You could run for governor and get 35 or 40%, and you looked like you were a candidate, and that was just the no vote that Clinton had. I was going to run for governor because I had all this network that I'd set up in college and understood. But when my brother got hurt in a car wreck, I hadn't been back to an Arkansas political meeting since. Right? So, going for that, I'd be governor. Guy told me last week he was 3/4 of a second away. He played for Penn State. He said, I'm 3/4 of a second from making $3.72 million a year. And I said, really? He said, yeah. I ran the 40 in 5.2. If I could have ran it in 4.3, I'd have made it. Yeah, right. Okay. Listen to what the Lord said through Jeremiah, continuing with Jeff's observations. Let not a wise man boast of his wisdom, and let not the mighty man boast of his might. Let not a rich man boast of his riches, but let him who boasts boast of this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who exercise loving kindness, justice, and righteousness on the earth, for I delight in these things. Let each of us strive to know more about the Lord and how we can stand before him than about how we stand in terms of this life. May our confidence and security and enjoyment come from our relationship with Creator rather than what He created. Let us make sure that our boast is not soul. You have many goods laid up for many years. Come, take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. As in Luke 12, you know how that worked out. You know the rest of the story. But rather, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If our goal to relax and enjoy and be content and be happy, the first theoretical stuff we put up there, we could really make real, wouldn't every day be so much easier? Because we wouldn't stress. We wouldn't freak out. Wouldn't scream and holler. Wouldn't want to shoot our employees. You know, I told Logan the other day, he said, Dad, we got to stop doing business with all these crazy people. I said, if it weren't for crazy people, we wouldn't have much of a business. Right? I mean, we're in the real estate auction business. So we do business with people that have usually lived beyond their means. So think about, I think really, really realistically, we know each other reasonably well. We need to know each other better. We have days that we really do a good job of this at home. I hope we have days that we really do a good job of this on the job. Don't overreact. We want to enjoy the day. We want to survive, and we really want to let our light shine. You know, as you study these lessons, some of the most trite things come to your mind. You know, last week I'm in Michigan at this charity auction, and we're raising money for Fisher House, and this guy builds houses and donates them to the VA and lets veterans' families stay in them while they're in the hospital. And a guy comes in, huge. Guy looks like an NFL player. Both of his legs are blown off. He's in a wheelchair. He gives this amazing talk, not whining, not crying, just saying, hey, this is what I signed up for. And the thing that we've heard 1,000 times, but when you hear him say it, freedom's not free. Wow. And he said, look, I'm not asking you to feel sorry for me. I'm asking you to look at the price that I've paid. And I want you to consider the price that you're paying. That's what God's telling us, right? I want you to look at the price that I've paid to cover your sins. I've given my son, and you don't have time to go to church on Wednesday night. That's probably a bad example. But you don't have time to attend. You don't have time to work this out. You don't have time to expand or condition yourself to enjoy the world that I've created for you. You know, we were just talking before we started. Gosh, I've had several airplanes and been involved in several airplane partnerships. I have never had a drug problem or a woman problem, but I have had an airplane problem. And it's just the coolest thing ever, though, right? And I think I'm over it. I got my 12 steps or something in my pocket, whatever that is. But I think I finally found enjoyment without that, right? Because I've got a piece to understand it's really not that big a deal. It's cool and it's fun, but if you're not careful, you get locked in to a measurement of success or to a lifestyle that prohibits your enjoyment when it goes away. Okay. Let's create a path to enjoyment. Thomas Edison once said, "We often miss opportunity because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work." Apparently, he knew the millennial generation, right? We spend a significant amount of our life working. It's a large piece of our life, and it's important to think thoughtfully and intentionally about it. I really do know people who are happy with their work. They find meaning, significance, and joy in it. However, I've met many people who are unhappy with their work and choose to spend a significant percentage of their life complaining about it. Interesting enough, these differences in attitude have little to do with the actual work being done. In fact, two people in the same field can have completely different responses to the same job. This is important to recognize because it means enjoying work has less to do with your actual job and more to do with your attitude towards it. Let's see. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of an attitude on life. Attitude is more important than facts. It is more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than success, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, or a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the string we have. That is our attitude. I am convinced that it is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react. And so it is with all of us. We have to be in charge of our attitude. Right? Man, to me, that's so easy advice to give, and it is so hard to take. Right? Because that attitude has hit me moment by moment. Right? Okay, so back to me. I've taken care of my brother for 37 years. I'm tired. My dad had a stroke in 1999. I've taken care of my mother. How long has that been? Seems like 5 years. How long is 1999? 18 years? I'm tired. Is that fair? God has blessed me with the opportunity to take care of them. I haven't done that. So I've got to have the attitude of appreciation and thankfulness. I can't be angry about this. I've got a very good Jewish friend that says, Mark, with every curse, with every challenge comes a blessing from the Lord if you're one of his children. Probably not a bad way to look at it, right? And he's saying, and we know each other well, he's got some challenges in his life, and he says, I'm going to tell you, when something happens to your mother or your brother, the income that you're using to take care of them will go away. Because I have enough money to have an airplane if they're gone. Right? Okay. Attitude. Changing your attitude towards work is often far easier than changing jobs. It also means you can be happy in your work today. You can find fulfillment and joy in it. It could come with a tweak of your thinking. Oh, yeah, let's talk about our guy. He just bought a lake house, but his family won't go to the lake house. They're too busy to go. Okay, the path to enjoying work. We're going to talk about seven things, and we're going to quickly go through. Realize we are designed to work by the Creator. Back to the text, Ecclesiastes 3. We're designed to work, okay? To live life the way you choose when nobody's looking. And that's got something to do with designing your path to enjoyment. Do your work when nobody's looking just as hard. Do you remain just as reliable? Are you just as responsible? Are you just as considerate of others? The seeds for achievement and enjoyment are shown when nobody's looking, because the things you do when nobody's looking are driven by what you expect of yourself. And whatever you expect of yourself is what you will become, and if you will create enjoyment. Right? When you get off the phone with the customer, when you walk in the door with your wife, whatever goes on, you're choosing the attitude. You better choose the attitude and not just revert to some preset deal. I think I started this while ago, and I don't know, I got hung up on an airplane. Some of the best advice I ever got when I was traveling early, we had offices around the state, I ran into a competitor that we worked against and together with each other for many years out in West Texas. And he said, "Mark, how many nights a year are you gone from home?" I said, "Gosh, I really don't know." And he said, "Well, I'm guessing that you're gone somewhere between 50 and 100 nights." And this was back in the day. I said, yeah, I'm sure it's somewhere. He said, "I'm gone 100 nights. Let me tell you the best thing you can do." Because I would get in the plane at midnight or 1 o'clock and fly from Midland to Texarkana, and I'd get home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and be not in the best attitude the next day. He said, "Spend the night, go home fresh, make sure your family enjoys you being there." Wow. Best advice ever, right? Okay, so think about this, guys. If we could collectively help each other, we can enjoy and we can conquer the challenges of this life. I don't have a lot of advice, but I got a lot of experience. And the same thing with a lot of y'all. If I could pick through your experience, I would understand so much more, right? I would have a different attitude about my problems because you have problems. You would have it. If you knew how much I believe God has given me, I think you'd have a different attitude about some of the challenges that you face. If I knew what God had done for you, we would approach this day-to-day business different. We're not alone and by ourselves. Spend some time in James. Brent did an amazing lesson 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he talked about the value of James and wisdom and the things that we could ask for and what God would do for us. And spend some time looking at that lesson. I've got some cryptic notes that you can't read, but I've read them 100 times. And it's amazing what God has said he will do for us. And Les told me this 100 years ago. When you look back on your life, Mark, you're going to see God. You can't see him in front of you, and you can't see him with you. But when you look back, you're going to see God. And wow, that's so true. That's so true. So our young men, our sons and daughters, everybody we impact, can we not say, the reason I'm in a good mood, the reason, seriously, we really did a good job of handling the guy. We did not bury him on Wednesday that did our failure. I did a call with him, and I said, "Look, you know everybody is out for your hide. I want you to be forthright, tell everybody what happened, and we're going to defend you, and we're going to go forward, and we're not going to have this problem again." And so he called me just a couple of days ago, and he said, "Look, I think I've survived, and I appreciate you not attacking me, because you were the one of the ones I was worried about most, because you have influence with a guy that can fire me." Right? But there's no reason for that. Okay, so Mark, what's my responsibility to this guy? Isn't it the perfect time for me to talk about the future of his life? No, let him worry about that. Think about our mission. Craig left a thought Sunday morning, and I'm not looking, I wrote it down, but one of the things that he said, our primary goal is to be a minister of the gospel. Not a preacher, but a minister of the gospel. And our attitude can carry us to that duty and that responsibility and that effort. Okay, I understand work takes place in an imperfect world. Maybe. Just so you know, not that this makes any difference, right? Thursday morning I got up, had an auction here in town. I had bought symphony tickets to go watch Jurassic Park, and the symphony plays the music, which I have no interest in, but Paul is just enamored by it, so I like I love it. So Thursday night I have to do that, so I have to call Logan and say, "Logan, will you come down and relieve me at the auction?" And then we're going to, so Logan came down. I went to bed at 5 o'clock Friday. Okay, I got up Thursday morning, about 6, I don't know what time. I went to bed at 5 o'clock Friday morning. I got up at 7 o'clock because I had a meeting. I worked all day yesterday, did not take a nap. I got home last night at 2 o'clock, and I got up at 6 o'clock this morning, right? So my point is, oh, please feel sorry for me, okay? But the point should be, we've all got our trials. We've all got responsibility. It's about our attitude. And I said, starting out, I never hope to retire. Why wouldn't you want to quit this crazy job, right? But it's about the perspective and the lifestyle that gives. Okay, understand work takes place in an imperfect world. Let's go. Scott, can you do your deal in 10 minutes? Furthermore, Christians are challenged to live securely in an unsecure world. Now, this was written by Ricky Jenkins. Fears, anxiety, and stress are all about us. These affect us all. Most anxiety is not caused over fear of not having enough to eat, but fear of not being able to keep up with someone else. And I think I don't know that we have the challenge of someone else as much as we have something else, right? If I just had a bigger yard, if I just had a bigger house, if I just had a different car, if I just had a different job, if I could just go a better place on vacation. I think as Christians, we've kind of settled back and we're not so, I don't think we're as envious as society. Today, an adjusted person is someone who balances their pills. Why in the land of plenty are so many people living insecurely? The answer is because we trust in false standards. We all need to be reminded that security does not rest in things, as in Luke 12. Life is not what we can gather around ourselves. People live and die with dread who are surrounded with wealth and things. They never learn to really enjoy what they have. Our challenge is to put our trust in God, not things. As Christians, we do not know what the future holds, but we do know who holds the future. We do not have all the answers, but we know who does. Security and enjoyment is an attitude of heart. It is not what happens to us that makes a difference. It is our attitude towards what happens to us that matters. No one can take from us our right to choose our attitude towards our circumstances in life and to enjoy. Okay, remember our guy, he just bought a lake house and nobody wants to go with him. We'd already done that. That's the result of being up 2 days. Use your work to supply provisions for yourself and family. It's a barter system, right? That's why we go to work. Want to provide the lifestyle. Number four, notice how your work contributes to the common good. That's an important thing we talk about. Work ethically. Very, very important. Y'all know anybody that works unethically? You know, they're jumpy, right? Because they got 4 or 5 stories with 8 or 10 different people and got to remember who they told what and manage the whole process, right? Or, you know, I had a guy come to me just a few weeks ago. A young man has written, I think he said, a $314,000 check to a government agency he did an auction for. It's been 14, 16 months, and they've not cashed the check. He said, what should I do? I said, you should bring me the check and we'll split the money. What should he do? What should he do? The ethical thing, I said, here's the way to answer that question. If it's $10, what would you do? I said, I'd call him and they'd get him to cash the check. That's what you got to do. That's the answer. Because, you know, in everybody says, well, everybody's got their price, right? And he had found his price, $314,000. Whoa, wait a minute. That's a lot of money. $10 I want to be honest about. Work ethically. Humbly and proudly accept your honest compensation. Number 7, the whole one rest here. Remove the pursuit of riches. If you can remove the pursuit of riches, your attitude, you got no problem. We replace the desire to get rich with a more fulfilling desire to do a good job, enjoy the day, help our family and friends enjoy their days and their lives, to serve God, live for our Lord. We can find satisfaction and greater value in our work and enjoyment. Psalms 1:1-2, blessed is the man who delights in the law of the Lord, and on his way he meditates day and night. Okay. First guy we talked about appears to be happy. He is currently married. He says to his second wife, even though it is actually number 3, because he says the first one really doesn't count because they were young high school sweethearts, got married between high school and college, went to work at her daddy's bank. Things just didn't work out. Even though there's a daughter he has no idea about, he doesn't count that one, but God does. That was my college roommate, right? But when you look at him, he looks like the happiest guy in the world. His life is a wreck. And he's always trying to find enjoyment and happiness. Point being, looks happy, acts happy, has many things, toys, travel, lifestyle that we think would make us happy. He does not enjoy life. Last thing. Boy, I sure skipped some stuff. I'll turn this into you, Steve and Randy, if you would give me a grade of complete. Living life. Life is not a race. but indeed a journey. Be honest, work hard, be choosy. Say thank you, I love you, and great job to someone each day. Go to church, take time for prayer. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh. Let your handshake mean more than pen and paper. Love your life and what you've been given. It is not accidental. Search for your purpose and do it as best you can. Dreaming does matter. It allows you to become that which you aspire to be. Laugh often. Appreciate the little things in life and enjoy them. Some of the best things really are free. Another trite saying. Do not worry. Forgive. It frees the soul. Take time for yourself. Plan for longevity. Recognize the special people you've been blessed to know. Live for today and enjoy. Thank you very much.